and welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour. I'm your host, Justine Ward, and each week we bring you a classic show from radio's golden age. Happy Valentine's Day to all our listeners. This week we are celebrating with two very different half-hour shows, and I hope you enjoy them both. First, we have our favorite English teacher, Miss Brooks, trying to communicate romantically to the nerdy biology teacher, Mr. Boynton. She decides the only way to his heart is through his pet frog in this hilarious Valentine episode. Stay tuned for Frances Langford in a Valentine's Day special from her travels all over the world entertaining the troops during World War II. First, we have our Miss Brooks, the frog, first broadcast February 20th, 1949 on CBS.
Palmolive soap, your beauty hope, and Luster Cream shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks teaches English at Madison High. Like many other romantically inclined people, she sent the object of her affections, Madison's bashful biologist, Philip Boynton, an unsigned card for Valentine's Day. And then she sat down to wait for his reply.
It wasn't that his reply was long in coming. It just didn't come at all. Knowing Mr. Boynton, I wasn't too surprised that he forgot about Valentine's Day, but I was determined to change the locale of our next date. For the past 6 weeks, we had spent every Friday afternoon at the zoo. Now, I am definitely not anti-animal, but I am a schoolteacher. And hence, after spending 3 hours in the monkey house, I just can't afford to buy taboo by the quart. I was brooding about it in the school cafeteria on Friday when Harriet Conklin walked over.
Mind if I sit down with you, Miss Brooks?
Not at all, Harriet. But don't you usually have lunch with Walter Denton?
Well, yes, I do. But he's manager of the basketball team, you know, and he's giving the boys an extra skull practice.
Really? Whose skull are they using today?
I hope you're not expecting Mr. Boynton to have lunch with you, Miss Brooks. He told me he was eating his lunch in the laboratory because he didn't want to leave McDougal alone.
Oh, don't tell me that frog is sick again.
Not actually sick. It's just spring fever or something. It's kind of fun to have lunch without any men around anyway. Don't you think so, Miss Brooks?
Well, yes and no.
What do you mean, yes and no?
No.
We haven't had a real woman-to-woman talk in a long time. No, Walter Denton is crazier about me than ever. All I have to do is whistle and he comes running.
Really?
It's the only way to train them. That's what you ought to try with Mr. Boynton.
I have, but every time I whistle, he opens his lunchbox.
Walter just smothers me with attention. Sometimes his dog-like affection and constant worship becomes absolutely cloying.
Well, I wish Mr. Boynton would cloy me once in a while. By the way, Harriet, when Walter takes you out on a date, where do you usually go?
Oh, all sorts of places, Miss Brooks. A drive in the country or a long walk in the park. Or sometimes we go to a movie and hold hands.
Do you ever go to the zoo?
The zoo? Gosh, no. Except when Mr. Boynton takes us there for his monthly lecture.
That's where I've got an edge on you kids. I hear it every week.
But Mr. Boynton takes you to the movies once in a while, doesn't he?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, we went last week.
Was it romantic?
Oh, extremely. We stood in a crowd of people behind a velvet rope for a while, and then an usher said, "There's one down front."
Yes?
That was the last I saw of Mr. Boynton for 3 hours. I finally got a seat in the balcony.
Oh, golly, that's a shame, Miss Brooks. You couldn't hold hands at all, could you?
Not even with the long gloves I was wearing. But about those Fridays in the monkey house, Harriet...
I'm surprised at you, Miss Brooks. You don't really let Mr. Boynton take you to the monkey house every week, do you?
Well, I think it's the monkey house. It can't be the Taj Mahal with all those bananas.
Well, if it isn't Madison High's Ferris, may I join this charming bevy of pulchritude?
Why, Walter, what a lovely speech.
Yes, you are a delightful child, Walter. But if you'll excuse me, Miss Brooks, I'd like to get my entree at the steam table.
Oh, can I be of service, fair Harriet? I'll gladly fetch what you want.
No, thank you. But if you'll sit up nicely when I return, I'll pat you on the head.
Arf, arf.
Can I get you anything, Miss Brooks?
No, thanks, Harriet. Just bring back a roast beef bone and a can of Strong Hard.
See you in a few minutes.
Okay, Harriet.
You know, I think it's wonderful the way you kids get along. You're very fond of Harriet, aren't you, Walter?
Very. Plus which, Harriet's the principal's daughter, and I'm manager of the basketball team. And there are things that I can accomplish quicker if I can get to Mr. Conklin without having to go through regulation channels all the time.
What's good about getting to Mr. Conklin so fast?
Well, I like getting things done fast that need getting done fast. Like New Jersey's, for instance.
Like New Jersey's what, for instance?
Not New Jersey's anything. New jerseys for the basketball team. Oh, we need them badly.
You do, at that. The ones the team wore in their last game looked awfully fuzzy.
They didn't wear any in their last game. But I'm sure the new ones will come through all right. I'm taking Harriet out on a date tonight, and I can bring it up casually when I see Mr. Conklin at his house.
I don't like to suggest a career for you, Walter, but I have a feeling you're going to kiss an awful lot of babies before you're much older.
Oh, I could never be a politician. I'm too sincere. Oh, but why are we talking about me? You seem to have a problem of your own on your mind, Miss Brooks.
Is it that obvious, Walter? I have been thinking about Mr. Boynton, but only in connection with getting him out of the zoo and into my parlor.
That shouldn't be too tough. What kind of a web are you spinning?
Web?
Look, Miss Brooks, at the risk of feeling like a traitor to a fellow male, I'll help you plot Mr. Boynton's overthrow. But frankly, I'm kind of hungry right now.
Then why don't you eat, Walter, and we can finish building the bomb after lunch.
Oh, say, there's Mr. LaBlanche, the new French teacher. Oh, he ought to know plenty about romance. He's a real Frenchman. I'll call him over.
Don't you dare, Walter. When I'm ready to take my case to the United Nations, I'll let you know. Besides, I've seen Mr. LaBlanche on dates with Miss Enright lately.
So what? Miss Enright goes on dates with anybody. Gosh, every time she sees Mr. Boynton, she makes goo-goo eyes at him.
That's not nice, Walter. Miss Enright's eyes are always that way. I mean, it's unethical.
Unethical is better than lonesome, Miss Brooks. Oh, Mr. LaBlanche.
Walter, please.
You call me Walter?
Yes. Would you be kind enough to come over here a minute? I'd like to talk to you about something very important.
Well, you better talk to him, Walter, because I refuse to...
I bring my coffee along and... Oh. How do you, Miss Brooks?
Fine. How do you, Mr. LaBlanche?
What did you want to talk to me about, Walter?
Oh, it isn't important. I'll see you later.
Now, that's what I call a real subtle maneuver.
He's a funny boy, no?
No.
Wait. Now it's just you and I, Miss Brooks, eh?
I'm afraid it's just you, Mr. LaBlanche. I've got to see Mr. Conklin about something.
Mr. Conklin? Please, Miss Brooks, I think Mr. Conklin's a fine principal. But do you have to mention him during the lunch period?
You've got something there. I guess it can wait a while. It's only a question of giving him my weekly dollar.
Oh, you owe him a weekly dollar? For what?
It's a long and grim story, but I think I can boil it down to the repulsive essentials. A couple of weeks ago, I took an electric heater of his, connected it in Mr. Boynton's laboratory on an overloaded circuit, and shorted the building, started a small fire, and ruined the heater.
Why do you do that?
I like sirens. Oh, I didn't do it purposely, Mr. LaBlanche. It was an accident. One for which I'm paying at the rate of a dollar a week. And today's dollar day at Madison.
Well, that is too bad, Miss Brooks, but it is not money that causes you to look the way you do today.
Is there a sign on my forehead? How do I look today?
Well, there are only two things that can make a woman have the look you have on your face. One is an affair of the heart. The other is the meatballs in this cafeteria. But neither of them is incurable, eh? I'm sure.
You haven't eaten those meatballs lately. Look, it's nice of you to try and cheer me up, Mr. LaBlanche.
Oh, please,
but...
call me Paul. And I'm not trying to cheer you up. I'm trying to help you. First of all, tell me this. Did you receive any messages on Valentine's Day?
Oh, scad. I got one from Zimmerman's Bakery. One from the finance company. A lovely little card from Bertie's bicycle shop. In the shape of a pump, that one was. And, a dandy little poem from Sam, our neighborhood scissor sharpener. I think I remember that one. It went, I've applied my grindstone to shears both old and new, but I never met a scissors one half as sharp as you. Wasn't that a peachy sentiment for Valentine's Day?
Oh, quite amusing, yes, but not to you, I'm afraid. Because you're not in love with Sam the scissor or Bertie the bicycle.
No, my problem is Boynton the biology.
Miss Brooks, since we have taken me into your confidence, I would like to make a suggestion. You must play, how do you say in this country, you must play difficult to acquire.
Difficult to acquire?
Ah.
Oh, you mean hard to get.
Mm. Uh-huh. Precisely. Now tell me the truth. When Mr. Boynton asks you for an engagement, do you ever say no?
Well, no. But it isn't just because of Mr. Boynton. I'd hate to disappoint 400 monkeys. I haven't gone out with him much lately at all.
Because he do not ask you?
Well, I like that.
I am glad. Miss Brooks, there's one way to get a man interested that never fails. You must make him jealous.
I've tried that, Mr. LeBlanche, but he just doesn't jealous very easily.
Ah, yes, but you've tried it only once. That is not enough. How do the big American advertisings work? A repetition, over and over the same thing. What is it you hear on the radio all the time? Smoker Benny. Again and again. Smoker Benny. If you repeat this often enough, you know what happens?
Yeah, Jack gets pretty burned out. No, Mr. LeBlanche, I'm afraid Mr. Boynton is too wrapped up in a frog to pay any attention to me.
Oh, but of course, I forget Monsieur le Frog. You know, in France, we have a proverb. Le chemin au cœur d'homme est par son grenelle. Translation? The way to a man's heart is through his frog.
That's very touching, but I don't see what it has to do.
Oh, it's so simple, really. Here you have a man with his little pet, Monsieur le Frog. And here you have a woman with her pet, Mademoiselle la Frog. Now, we convince the man that Monsieur le Frog is lonesome. And where can his poor little frog find companionship? With Mademoiselle la Frog. And when the two little frogs are together, where are the man and the woman?
Pricing junior beds for tadpoles.
No, Miss Brooks, no. The man and the woman are also together. Now you know, Miss Brooks, what you have to do to get Mr. Boynton to be a bastiodor, no?
Yes, I've got to build a better frog trap. Look, Mr. LeFrog, LeBlanche. This idea is a little impractical.
How's coming, Miss Brooks? Oh, you look better already.
Hello, Walter. Mr. LeBlanche is quite an idea man. We were just discussing a really fantastic scheme. Not only fantastic, but ridiculous and absurd. Walter.
Yes, Miss Brooks?
Run down to Peterson's pet shop and get me a female frog.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment. But first, here is Vern Smith. The makers of Palmolive soap are giving away $100,000 in prizes. First prize, $49,000, plus over 4,900 other cash prizes in the big 49 Gold Rush Contest. Hundreds will strike it rich in this exciting Gold Rush Contest. One of them may be you. It's easy to enter. Just finish this sentence and 25 additional words or less. I like Palmolive soap because... That's all. Just 25 words or less to finish the sentence. I like Palmolive soap because... Then mail your entry right away along with a Palmolive soap wrapper. Try for your share of that $100,000 in prizes right now. Your chance of winning $49,000 is as good as anyone's. Get entry blank with complete rules from your dealer or write your completed sentence on plain paper. Include your name and address and dealer's name and address. Mail with one Palmolive soap wrapper for each entry to Gold Rush Contest, Box 49, New York 8, New York. Better write that down. Gold Rush Contest, Box 49, New York 8, New York. Enter as often as you like, including one wrapper with each entry. Get Palmolive soap right away to help win a lovelier complexion and try for your share of the $100,000 in cash prizes.
Well, Well, I gave Walter my last dollar to buy a female frog, and while he was out getting it, I took advantage of a free period to visit Mr. Boynton in his laboratory. Hello, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, hello, Miss Brooks.
I just dropped in to say hello, Mr. Boynton.
Hello.
Well, goodbye, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, don't go yet. I've just been examining McDougal. You know, my frog. He's got me a little worried. He's way off his feed, and we'll look at him.
Don't you think his eyes pop out more than usual?
Yes. After all, you raised him from a tadpole, and it's only natural that you should still think of him as your baby, but he's a big boy now. Did it ever occur to you that Mac gets lonesome all alone in that cage?
Oh, I let him out of the cage quite often. He hops all over the lab.
But what good is that? He hasn't got any friends here.
Oh, I don't know. There are always a number of guinea pigs around. Of course, he doesn't pay much attention to them.
Well, naturally, guinea pigs make fine friends for other guinea pigs. A frog might crave a different kind of companionship.
Well, what about me? I'm very close to McDougal. I've been his constant companion.
If I were a frog, I don't think I'd consider that the ideal arrangement either. No, I think I'd want something a little more frog-like.
What are you getting at, Miss Brooks?
Look, did you ever sit down and tell McDougal about the birds and bees?
What does he want with birds and bees? He won't even make friends with guinea pigs.
Well, let me put it this way. Mrs. Davis, my landlady, has a cat named Minerva. Now, around this time of the year, Minerva keeps us both awake half the night with an almost incessant yowling.
Well, have you tried giving her a saucer of milk?
That's not what she's yowling about, Mr. Boynton.
Milk's very effective, cat.
Yes, I know. And believe me, if I thought it would quiet her down, I'd give her an autographed picture of Elsie the cow. But it won't. She's yowling because she's lonely.
Why, Miss Brooks, I didn't know you were so aware of these biological manifestations. Where did you learn all this?
My mama done told me. A lot of things since I've acquired my pet frog. Pet female frog, that is.
Oh, you have a pet frog, Miss Brooks? What's her name?
Her name? Millie.
Millie?
Yes, from the picture of the mating of Millie. Oh, she's awfully cute, too.
Why, you think Mac almost understood what you were talking about?
Well, don't think for a minute he doesn't. What do you say, Mac? Would you like to come over and play with Millie this afternoon? Hooray! Today you are a man, Frog.
Well, this is amazing, Miss Brooks. If you don't mind, I'd like to ask you if...
Shine up your hope chest, Millie. Here it comes.
I'd like to ask you, Miss Brooks, how about a double date? That is, if it isn't too much trouble.
Shall we say my place for tea?
Splendid.
Just bring a pogo stick and a deck of cards, Mr. Boynton.
A pogo stick and cards?
Yes, while Mac and Millie play gin, you and I can have a hopping contest. l'amour, l'amour.
Excuse me. Could you come over here to the door a minute, Miss Brooks? I've got to get to my next class.
Oh, certainly, Walter. I'll just be a minute, Mr. Boynton.
Did you get it, Walter?
Yes, it's in this paper bag, Miss Brooks. Here, thanks. That's okay. I hope it works, Miss Brooks. Well, I'll see you in English.
What's in the bag, Miss Brooks?
This bag? Oh, just a roast beef sandwich Walter brought me.
Well, it's a pretty active one. Hey, look out, it's falling out of the bag. Here, let me see that. Yeah, I've got him. Oh, Miss Brooks, do you realize what you've got here?
Sure, an frog. I didn't want to mention it in front of Mac until we got home.
Oh, but this is a male frog. You can always tell. Because in the species Dimorphognathus from West Africa, there's a very apparent dimorphism in the dentition. The male's being provided with a series of large serrated teeth in the lower jaw, which in the female is edentulous.
Well, slap me with a wet lily pad. Excuse me, Mr. Boynton. I've got to be running along now.
Oh, why, Miss Brooks?
I've got to see a boy about a frog.
Well, here, I'll put it back in the bag for you. Now, just hold the top tighter and he won't get away again. I still don't comprehend why you got this male frog.
Well, I didn't know how you and McDougal would react to the idea of keeping Millie company, so I thought I'd play safe and get this one, too.
Oh, I don't think Mac likes the idea very much. Don't be jealous, Mac.
Let him live his own life.
We'd better not come over this afternoon, Miss Brooks. I'm afraid it'd only confuse Mac.
Look, Mr. Boynton, I don't care if a frog wants to play hard to get. But there's something I'd like you to remember.
Well, what's that, Miss Brooks?
Well, I don't want to sound too much like an English teacher, but when one plays hard to get too often, one sometimes don't get got.
Oh,
Well, I'll just take this frog into my room and see how Walter happened to make such
an
awful...
Well, there you are, Connie. I've been looking all over for you.
Mrs. Davis, what are you doing in the hallowed halls of Madison High?
Well, I know how you've been waiting for a Valentine card from Mr. Boynton, and I just had to tell you that all hope isn't lost.
But today is Friday, Mrs. Davis.
That's just it, Connie. Some mail came this morning that should have been delivered Monday.
A Valentine?
No, a bill from the gas company.
Now, that's the nicest bit of sentiment since Sam Scissors.
They say that if we don't pay it immediately, they'll shut off the gas.
Just my luck with Mr. Boynton coming over for tea. It couldn't be the electric company promising to shut off all the lights.
No, Connie. And I'm short some money or I wouldn't bother you in school like this. You know, Minerva costs me a lot lately with her special diet. No.
Just how much do you need, Mrs. Davis?
Well, if you'll forgive a slang expression, one greenback will do it.
I just happen to have one on me. He's in this bag here. Now, don't look so alarmed, Mrs. Davis. I'm not cracking up completely. Look, just take this frog back to Peterson's pet shop and they'll refund my dollar. I'll explain why I bought the frog later.
You don't have to explain anything to me, Connie. If you want a frog for a pet, it's perfectly all right. But why are you giving it back?
To keep the gas on, for one thing. Besides, it's a male frog, and I've got to have a female.
Well, you don't have to spend any money for that. I'll get you a female frog in the park.
I never thought of that. I'd certainly appreciate it, Mrs. Davis. Will you bring it back with you after you've paid the gas bill?
Certainly, Connie, and I just know that you'll be very happy together.
And so, class, you are to have these compositions ready by next Tuesday. That's the end of the period. Class dismissed, except Walter Denton. Come up to my desk, Walter.
Oh, I'm glad you asked me, Miss Brooks. I wanted to explain about that frog. You see, Mr. Peterson was out to lunch when I got to the pet shop, so I got you one out of the park pond. But was it all right? I mean, was she a girl?
No, Walter, she was a boy with big serrated teeth in her lower jaw. And what about the dollar I gave you?
Oh, here it is, Miss Brooks. I didn't have time to give it to you before.
Thanks, Walter. That'll be all for now, then. I'd better get over to Mr. Conklin's office and make my payment on that heater.
Well, here I am, Connie. Hello, Walter.
Hello, Mrs. Davis. Goodbye, Mrs. Davis.
Well, what do you think, Connie? Mr. Peterson didn't sell Walter that frog at all.
I know, Mrs. Davis.
But he said it was a very good specimen and traded me a lovely female for him. And instead of giving us any money, he promised that when our frog becomes a husband, we'll get the pick of the litter.
I can hardly wait. But where's the female frog?
Oh, I had that in a paper bag and it seemed very insecure. So I put the frog in a desk across the hall. Nobody saw me.
Across the hall? But that's Mr. Conklin's office. Mrs. Davis, you wait right here. And if I'm not back in 5 minutes, call the coroner.
Now, what is it? Come in. Oh, it's you, Miss Brooks. Please transact whatever business you have in this office in a hurry. I've got an appointment with the doctor.
The doctor? What's the matter, Mr. Conklin?
Oh, just a checkup. A lot of nonsense, if you ask me. My wife's been telling him all sorts of foolishness about the state of my nerves. To hear her tell it, I've not only got the world's highest blood pressure, but I'm jumpy, anxious, overwrought,
but
irritable.
Mr. Conklin...
Don't interrupt! And I'm ill-tempered. Now, what is it you want?
I just want to give you a dollar towards the heater I accidentally injured. Here.
Oh, thanks. Well, sit down for a minute and I'll give you a receipt. I've got a regular Board of Education receipt book around here somewhere.
But, Mr. Conklin, your desk drawer...
Please, Miss Brooks. Don't tell me where I keep my things. Of course it's in the desk drawer. Let's see now. Book should be right over here next to this blotter. Oh, that's funny. Oh, here it is over by this frog. Hello, little frog. Miss Brooks, it won't take a moment to get the receipt. Hello, little frog! Miss Brooks, where did this monstrous... Do you know anything about this horrible creature? How did this
Please,
get in...
Please, Mr. Conklin, remember the world's highest blood pressure.
Never mind that. What is this frog doing in my desk?
Calm down, Mr. Conklin. Ours isn't the only school that's overcrowded.
thought you'd never get home from school, Connie. How long did Mr. Conklin spend bowling you out?
Oh, it seemed like hours, but actually it was only a few minutes. You should have been there when Mr. Conklin and Millie here faced each other across his desk drawer. Poor thing, her heart hasn't stopped beating yet.
Neither is yours, Connie. You're as jumpy as Minerva. Are you sure Mr. Boynton said he'd be over for tea?
Oh, definitely, Mrs. Davis. I told him all about how lonely Minerva was and compared her to McDougal. So he's bringing Mac over to meet Millie. It's the first time in weeks we've had a date away from the zoo.
Oh. Well, that's Mr. Boynton now. I'll go make the tea, Connie, and you receive him alone.
All right, Mrs. Davis, coming! Well, it's nice to see you boys. Come in. Let's go into the living room.
Thank you, Miss Brooks. Here's something for Millie. It's from McDougal.
Oh? I'll open it for her. Well, wasn't that thoughtful of Mac, Millie? Just what you needed, a clump of wilted lettuce. Here, I'll put it in this little box I keep her in.
Oh, I guess Mac wants to see what Millie looks like.
Oh, of course. Here, just hold him up. There we are. This is Mac, Millie.
I think she likes him. But, Miss Brooks, didn't you say you had a cat on the premises?
That's right, Minerva. She usually sleeps in the piano during the day. Here, Minerva, come out of the piano. Oh, well, she'll probably wake up in a little while. Sit down, Mr. Boynton.
Oh, before I do, don't you want to open this big box?
For me? Well, what in the world can this be?
Meow! It's a cat, Miss Brooks. I brought him over to keep Minerva company.
Meow! Well, here comes Minerva now.
Meow! They like each other, too. Miss Brooks, where are you going?
You know where I'm going. I'll meet you by the third monkey from the left.
Dean Barton, as our Miss Brooks, returns in just a moment. But first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight, show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a Luster Cream shampoo. Only Luster Cream brings you Kay Dumas' magic formula blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Gives loveliness lather even in hardest water. Glamorizes your hair as you wash it. Luster Cream, not a soap, not a liquid, but a dainty cream shampoo. Leaves hair fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen, soft. Manageable. Gives new beauty to all hairdos or permanents. 4-ounce jar, $1. Smaller sizes, either tubes or jars. Tonight, try Luster Cream Shampoo and be a
dream girl, beautiful Luster Cream Girl. You owe your crowning glory to a Luster Cream Shampoo.
And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, Mr. Boynton finally took McDougal and his cat and left. Mrs. Davis and I had dinner, and then we sat down in the living room to spend a quiet evening. Minerva went back to sleep, and everything was nice and peaceful when the phone rang. Lie down, Minerva. It's not for you. Hello? Hello? Oh, I'm sorry, Minerva. It is for you.
Next week, tune into another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Palmolive Soap, Your Beauty Hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch.
Here's good shaving news. 3 men out of every 4 can get more comfortable, actually smoother shaves with Palmolive Brushless Shaving Cream. This is not just a claim. Here's the proof. 1,297 men tried the Palmolive Brushless way to shave described on the tube. And no matter how they shaved before, 3 men out of every 4 got more comfortable, actually smoother shaves. Try Palmolive Brushless yourself. See if you don't get more comfortable, actually smoother shaves the proved Palmolive Brushless way.
For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evenings over most of these stations. And be with us again next week at this time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
You're listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web with your host, Justine Ward. Next, we have Francis Langford and June Lockhart dramatizing a USO tour visiting the men and women stationed around the world in the armed services during World War II. This Valentine's Day special was broadcast February 14th in 1944. Servicemen and women were making a push to victory, which would come in Europe a year later in May and Japan in August of 1945. It's a fascinating peek into the lives of those dedicated service members. Enjoy Cavalcade of America, G.I. Valentine, first broadcast February 14th, 1944 on NBC.
Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, presents Francis Langford, June Lockhart, and Tony Romano in G.I. Valentine.
Most of the products recently developed by chemists are doing war jobs now. There is one new discovery, however, that is available to help you keep your home bright and cheerful. It is Speedeasy, the new DuPont wall finish that so many people are using to paint over faded, soiled wallpaper. DuPont Speedeasy covers in one coat. It dries in an hour. It comes in 8 attractive colors. And DuPont Speedy is inexpensive, too. You can do over an average room for less than $3.
Tonight, February 14th, Cavalcade delivers a Valentine to the home front from the hearts of our servicemen and women overseas. The bearer of this Valentine is Francis Langford, who has recently returned from a 50,000-mile entertainment tour through the theaters of war. Francis Langford, with Bob Hope, Tony Romano, and other great troopers, carried song and laughter to more than 5 million of our men and women on fighting fronts from the Aleutians to Sicily. Assisted by Tony Romano and his indispensable guitar, and with June Lockhart as a pilot sweetheart, Miss Langford gives us, in an account written by Frank Gabrielson, the highlights of those 50,000 miles of singing through the war, telling us particularly of American women at war, of the WACs, the Red Cross workers, and the gallant Army nurses. DuPont presents G.I. Valentine, starring Francis Langford with Tony Romano and June Lockhart on the Cavalcade of America.
Cry, ladies and gentlemen, by Private James Tomaselli. And I sang it for Jimmy's girl as a kind of Valentine from him. He brought the song to me one day after a show we gave in an American camp somewhere in England.
I tell you, Francis, my girl at home worries about me and about the war. So I've been trying to write a letter explaining the war and how I'm okay and all. But you can't say much about war that's good, even this one. That we know we gotta fight. Anyway, I can't say anything. She can't read better in the papers. I guess what I really want to say to her is that I love her. and not to worry about me, because I'm coming back to her, if I can. But I can't write it like I feel it. So seeing music used to be my hobby. I wrote a song to tell her what I feel. Would you sing it sometime, Frances, when she could hear it?
Dear, just remember, you shouldn't feel so blue. There are so many others who feel the way you do. I can't say when, but we'll meet again. Honey, try and please don't cry.
Now let's go back to the summer of 1942 and a phone call. Hello?
Miss Langford?
Yes.
This is the USO Camp Shows. We'd like you and Bob Hope to make a tour of bases in Alaska and Aleutians. What do you say?
What would any woman say? I'd love it. But what do I wear? On your forthcoming trip, for the purpose of building morale in the armed forces, you're advised to take a fur coat, slacks, heavy sweaters, woolen socks, and woolen underwear. If desired, one heavy, practical, warm wool dress may be taken. So that was the wardrobe I took. And the first night we were in Alaska, we were asked to a party at the offices up in Fairbanks. They wore their uniforms, and I was the glamour girl who was supposed to uplift morale. I felt like Cinderella at 5 after 12. But seriously, it was wonderful to see those girls in their neat dress uniforms. That same afternoon, I'd seen them working endlessly in their wards. But tonight...
You see, Frances, we work quite hard, and we don't get much chance to remember life like it was. And we hope it's going to be again. So when we get an excuse like this dance, well, we go all out feminine. Personally, I'm in this war so I can call my lipstick, as well as my soul, my own.
That nurse was up before light the next morning and worked all day in the hospital. Besides her regular duties, she assisted at an emergency operation. She wrote 4 letters home for wounded men. She kidded constantly with the men in the convalescent ward and lighted several cigarettes for a bombardier from the Aleutians who had lost both arms. She went to bed that night dead tired, considering it an average day. I don't think anybody's going to get her lipstick. And I know nobody will ever get her soul. We were in Alaska about a week, flying to as many camps as we could. We played to audiences of thousands, and we played to little groups of bearded men at out-of-the-way landing fields hacked out of the forest. In some of these places, the men hadn't seen a woman in over a year. From Alaska, we flew to the Aleutians, to Naknek, Cold Bay, past Dutch Harbor on out to Umnak. At Umnak, they told us, I was the first woman ever on the island of Umnak, and everyone began to call me Virginia Dare of Umnak. There wasn't a building large enough to hold all the men, so we gave our show outdoors in the pouring rain. They had built a kind of stage for us, but naturally there were no seats. The men in the offices were squatted down on the mud to watch, and what an audience they were.
You made me sigh. I didn't want to tell you, I didn't want to tell you. I want some love, that's true. Yes, I do, deed I do, you know I do. Gimme, gimme, gimme what I cry for. You know you've got the kind of kisses that I die. You know you made me
that kid there. He's crying so.
Homesick, probably.
Bring him around afterwards, huh, Tony?
Okay, Franny. Let's take it again. A one. A two.
You may.
Congratulations, Miss Langford. A great show.
Thanks, Colonel. I hope the boys liked it.
Liked it. They loved it.
Francis, hey, Francis, can I see you a minute?
Yes, Tony. Will you excuse me a minute, gentlemen?
Why, certainly, Miss Langford, yes.
Say, Francis, I found the kid you wanted to see.
Oh, good.
Fanny, this is Eddie Riggs.
Oh, hello, Eddie.
I do, ma'am.
You better call me Francis. Ma'am really makes me feel like Virginia Dare.
Yes, ma'am.
You're in the Air Force, I see.
Well, meteorology. We take care of the weather.
You must have your hands full up here. This rain.
261 and 6/10 inches a year.
Is it interesting work?
Yes, ma'am. Francis.
Say, where are you from, Eddie?
Chinook, Kansas.
I'll probably be in Kansas this winter. We play camps all over the country, you know. Would you like me to call up your folks and tell them I saw you?
Oh, well, that'd be a bother for you.
Oh, no. I'm making lots of calls for the boys.
Well, if you really could, it'd be fine. Just look in the Chinook phone book, numbers under Dr. George Riggs, and ask for Ma. Or Mrs. Riggs, I mean.
I certainly will, Eddie. And I'm sorry my song upset you.
Well, I like your song, honestly.
What were you crying about?
Sorry you noticed. I didn't think anyone would in the rain.
Anything wrong at home, Eddie?
No, but he's fine. Otherwise, I'd have had a letter from Ma. She's pretty busy, so she doesn't write much unless something special happens. Of course, Pa hasn't got time to write his prescriptions, hardly.
When I call your mother, Eddie, shall I tell her you might like a letter, even if there isn't much to say?
Just say you saw me. I think a lot about home. That wasn't why I was crying.
Why, then?
Well, I guess it's just the idea of you folks coming all this way to make us laugh and feel better. It's great to know people at home haven't forgotten all about us.
Last June, we started out again, this time for England, Bob and Tony and I. We were there 6 or 7 weeks giving our shows at American camps all over the British Isles. For the first time, I had the sense of seeing a whole country at war. For every shortage we have at home, the English have a dozen. It's pretty hard to be complacent about a war when you've had it in your own backyard. And the English have. But what I remember most vividly about England is the day we spent at one of the American air bases there. Before sunrise, we stood on the field and watched 45 fortresses take off on an undisclosed mission. We counted them out one by one as they moved down the runways and took the air. 45 went out. How many would come back? That afternoon, we again stood beside the runways to wait for the returning planes and count them in. We weren't the only ones that waited. There were the ground crews. There were officers anxious to learn the results of the mission. There were a few wives or sweethearts waiting. And there was a row of ambulances, all waiting. Just before the scheduled time of return, the suspense gets almost unbearable. Every time on the field, it gets the same way. Next to me was a girl in a Red Cross worker's uniform. She lit a cigarette and I could see her hands shake. This waiting can be tough, huh?
Every time I come here, I swear it's the last time.
I saw all 45 go out this morning, and you know, I have a hunch all 45 are coming back.
Figure on a 5% loss and you'll be about right. 2 or 3 planes, probably.
Say, are you connected with this base?
Yeah, unofficially. I'm engaged to the navigator on the Fortress Popeye.
The Popeye sounds unbeatable.
Well, if they don't run out of spinach, meaning luck.
Why is everybody so quiet all of a sudden?
Well, they're just about due back, if nothing went wrong. Listen.
And they were coming back, fortress after fortress,
One, two, then five, then ten of them. Are any of those the Popeye?
No.
Then it was 20 of them, and 25, and 30. Is the Popeye here yet?
Not yet.
Then it was 32, 35, 37, 38. Are you positive the Popeye hasn't landed?
Positive. Oh, look. Look, here come 39 and 40. But that's not him.
How can you tell from this distance?
I know his plane.
After number 40 hit the field, they seem to stop coming.
Oh, they can't have lost five.
No, here's another. And one more behind it. That's 42.
That's three lost. Well, that's not too bad.
Is his plane one of those two?
I can't tell yet. Oh, wait. There are another two back of them. That's 44.
Out of four, one is bound to be the Popeye.
Well, it looks like they finally ran out of spinach.
Oh, come on. I'm sure they'll make it.
Well, they'd have been here long ago. Anyway, they all don't come back. Well, thanks for waiting with me.
I'm sorry.
Well, every trip, somebody's left looking at the empty sky. Why, one out of 45 is a very good percentage of...
Listen, do you hear something?
Oh, it's the Popeye. They found their spinach!
The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, is bringing you Francis Langford with Tony Romano and June Lockhart in G.I. Valentine, a first-hand account of Miss Langford's travels on three continents to sing for our fighting men and women. She has told us how, with Bob Hope and Tony Romano, she visited our forces in Alaska, the Aleutians, and the British Isles. From England, they headed for North Africa, where Frances resumes her story.
Africa was everything I expected, but more so. More heat, more sand, more strangeness. At our first show there, the temperature was something over 130 in the shade. But there wasn't any shade. After the show, we had about 2 hours before we left. I was tired and I wanted to rest. So some wax station there took me to their barracks so I could have a nap. A nice, long nap.
Oh, how long are dresses now?
What about these ration points?
Can you or can't you get nail polish?
Well, dresses are about to... Here.
Oh, can you get nail polish?
Well, that's not too tough.
But face tissue is murder, huh?
Murder is right.
You know, when I get out of this girl's army, I'm just going to go to a beauty parlor and stay.
Who's the big star of entertainment now, Frances?
Present company accepted. Well, I'd say Sinatra.
Who?
Frank Sinatra.
What does he do?
Why, he's a singer.
I never even heard of him.
Me neither.
It shows you. Time goes by.
Frances, why aren't more girls at home joining the wax?
Oh, do we have to talk shop?
Well, I want to know. Why aren't they, Frances?
Oh, pay no attention to Ryan, Frances. She thinks it's smart to gripe. She's only the best soldier in the outfit.
Well, what's tough about that?
Last month she could have had leave home. She wouldn't take it.
Why should I go where I can't get face tissue or bobby pins? That's too tough.
Don't let her kid you, Frances. She's crazy about the outfit.
Say, Frances, you got a picture of yourself you can spare?
Sure, Ryan. I'll autograph one for you.
No. No, don't sign it. I'll do that.
You'll sign my name on the picture?
No, my own. I want to send it to a guy I'm corresponding with.
Then it's somebody you've never met.
Yeah. His lodge writes to wax.
But what'll happen when you meet him? How is he going to like you signing my picture?
Oh, he won't have any kick coming. You know what he sent me with his name on? A picture of your husband, John Hall. Hey, say, what time you got?
10 past.
Holy cow, I got to write my letter. Well, I'll see you after you had your nap, Frances, huh?
You bet, soldier. Real G.I. Josephine, that gal. Is she really going to write to that man?
Oh, that's just for laughs. He's going to write her brother now. He's got a bum lung or something, so the army wouldn't take him. He feels kind of bad about it, so Ryan is always writing him. Mm-hmm.
Her brother is why she joined up. She figured if he couldn't fight, that she should.
Then Ryan really likes the rack, huh?
She loves it. And if only they'd let us use guns, she'd be the happiest girl in the world.
were strong, healthy women. Any war plant in America would pay them almost as much for a week as the Army would pay them for a month. In this country, of course, they would have to face point rationing, gas rationing, shortages of non-essential goods, and the income tax. But they would be home and they would be safe. Instead, these girls of their own free will chose a job that brought them to blistering Africa and air raids and no extra pay for overtime. Private Ryan, even before you get to that beauty shop, you look mighty good to me. From Bizerta, we flew to Sicily, where in a single show we performed to 19,000 men. Our stage was a captured Nazi tank. One day in Sicily, we played a hospital show, and walking down the corridor on our way to the ward, we heard Latin coming from one of the small rooms. It was a Catholic chaplain administering the last rites. But we went on to the ward and did our show, and the wounded men enjoyed it very much. And in the same hospital the next day, a nurse walked by me carrying a tray. Here, let me help you.
I'm all right. Oh,
sit over here. Thanks. I'll get a doctor.
No. I'll be all right in a minute.
I'm going to get a doctor.
No, please. Please. I just need to rest a minute.
You need to lie down. And you need a doctor.
No, wait. Please, I don't want a doctor.
What do you mean?
They might send me home.
Maybe you should be home.
Oh, nothing serious. It's just, I guess I'm getting older.
Please, let me get a doctor.
Look, Miss Langford, I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse for 25 years. I know what I need and what I don't. Thanks for being worried. Nothing's going to happen to me. Give me a hand up, please.
Well, at least you can rest a while.
You're married, aren't you, girl?
Yes, I am.
So was I. My husband died in a French hospital in the last war. Don't know quite how he died. Maybe if he'd had a little better care, he wouldn't have. And if I sit here resting, what happened to my Fred might happen to one of these boys.
I see what you mean. I talked with one kid in the ward who'd only been married a month before he came overseas.
A month? Fred and I were married just the day before he sailed for France.
Nurse.
Coming.
But of everything I saw and did, what moved me most happened not once, but every day, in every camp, at 5 o'clock.
Attention!
The flag was lowered, and in the faces of men, you saw what this was. It was home. It was Main Street. It was why.
Ego sum rexio et vita.
No, that's not the Popeye.
Nurse.
Coming.
Just tell Ma you saw me.
So when we get the chance, we go all out feminine. She could have had Lee, and she wouldn't go.
I guess what I really want to say is that I love her, and that I'm coming back to her, if I can.
Please don't cry. Try those blue eyes. I will come back someday. But we'll
The DuPont Cavalcade thanks you, Francis Langford, June Lockhart, and Tony Romano, for your report to us and appreciates the fine work you and all the entertainment world are doing to brighten the days of our fighting men. Miss Langford has something to add to her report and will return to the microphone in just a few moments. Meanwhile, here is Gayne Whitman speaking for DuPont to tell us of an interesting chemical treatment for seeds that benefits us all, whether we are farmers or not.
Eating, somebody has remarked, is a habit. It certainly is. And it isn't limited to any one country either. The men and women and children of all nations have a firm, fixed habit of eating. So food must be grown for them to eat. And we have learned in this war that every extra ton of food we can produce is precious. Here is good news for the farmers of North and South America, and good news for us all who eat what the farmers grow. Realizing their vital importance, this year enough mercury has been released to enable DuPont and other chemical companies to manufacture a full 1944 supply of mercuric seed treatment compounds for farmers. Whether you are a farmer or not, this affects you. It affects both the amount of food you will have in 1944 and the price you will pay for it. Take cotton, for instance. Cotton isn't a food crop? Oh, yes, it is. Cotton seed is every bit as important as cotton fiber, because cotton seed is used in manufacturing many cooking oils and kitchen shortenings. Cotton farmers can plant their seed earlier, getting ahead of their dreaded enemy, the boll weevil, by using a seed disinfectant like DuPont Cirasan, which gives the seed a protective coating. This coating safeguards the seed even in cold, damp soil in the early spring, and makes it unnecessary for farmers to replant their cotton several times when soil conditions are unfavorable. Seed costs money. So does fertilizer. So does labor. All of them, in wartime, are hard to find. Seed treatment, treating seed with chemicals before it is planted, usually means bigger crops of better quality. Wheat, corn, beans, potatoes. Practically every food plant known has its own diseases, carried in many cases on the seeds themselves. If nothing is done to combat them, these diseases reduce the amount of marketable food produced per acre. Now, there are available not only different mercury seed disinfectants, but also a new seed treatment which contains an organic product and no mercury. This is Arisan seed treatment. Arisan is an effective product for peanuts, corn, and certain vegetables. More and more farmers everywhere in the world are learning the value of seed treatment. So it's good news that in 1944, enough seed-treating compounds to fill our needs will be available. Seed-treating chemicals help to increase the United Nations wartime supply of food. Deserve honorable mention among DuPont's Better Things for Better Living through Chemistry.
And here is the star of tonight's cavalcade, Francis Langford.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight I told you about the time in England when I saw 45 planes go out and the same 45 planes return. That was last summer. Yesterday, I met an officer who was at that field that day, and of those 45 planes, two remain. Is it really so tough to buy that extra war bond?
Week on the eve of Washington's birthday, DuPont presents Guy Kibbe, Dick Foran, and Wendy Barry in The Purple Heart Comes to Free Meadows, the warmly inspiring story of a young sergeant just returned from the war and a New England village eager to honor the first village boy to win the Purple Heart. It's a dramatic story, too, of the significance and brave tradition of the original Purple Heart awarded by General Washington. Cavalcade is pleased to remind its audience that Francis Langford appeared tonight through the courtesy of RKO Pictures. June Lockhart appeared through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, whose current production is Madame Curie. This is James Bannon sending best wishes from Cavalcade's sponsor, the DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, who invite you to join Cavalcade's audience next Monday when Guy Kibbe, Dick Foran, and Wendy Barry will be starred in The Purple Heart Comes to Free Meadows, a story of the Purple Heart and the brave tradition that surrounds it down to the present day.
For you from Hollywood, this is the National Broadcasting Company.
You have been listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, broadcast each week over the World Wide Web. You can subscribe at no charge through Apple Podcasts, Podbean, or RSS. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you can join us again next week for another hour of entertainment from the golden age of radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.